Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Each week, Inside Education brings you the best from the world of education from an Irish perspective. My name is Sean Delaney and you can listen to or download hundreds of podcasts of previous editions of Inside Education from seandelaney.com/podcasts. The guest on this week's programme is Dr. Eric Clinton, who lectures in entrepreneurship in Dublin City University, DCU, Business School, and who was awarded the Teaching Innovation and Entrepreneurship Excellence Award hosted at the European Conference on Innovation and Entrepreneurship in 2015. In his spare time, Eric is interested in sports, including triathlons, cycling and taekwondo, and lessons from sport have influenced his teaching. Eric Clinton teaches a module on the Bachelor of Business Studies in DCU. In the first 2 years of the course, students take typical business and commerce modules such as finance, marketing and human resources. In third year, students do a work placement where they apply theory to practice. Eric teaches a module on entrepreneurship in the fourth and final year of the course. He begins by telling us about that module.
It's an applied module in entrepreneurship. So the start, for example, in September of the year, the students are tasked with creating a new innovative product or service. And the most important word there is innovation. So we all have ideas and we all have, oh, I'm going to create the new product or service which for my sport, for my music, for my whatever it is, for my child who maybe has an intellectual disability, whatever it might be. We all have ideas. And this is challenging a group of five students to bring their ideas to fruition. We give them the resources. Some of you may have seen a 3D printer, which is just a truly exceptional piece of technology. And if you've got an idea for a new shape for a perfume bottle or for a new football boot, you can put it into the design of the on the computer and it'll produce an image for you. So we give them resources like that. We give them access to, you know, computer applications, facilities, and obviously the wider university. So it's a very much hands-on, practical module in entrepreneurship.
If we take probably one of the most famous entrepreneurs, Richard Branson, he wouldn't have gone to university. What do students gain from studying entrepreneurship at university level that they wouldn't gain or they wouldn't be able to do just by doing it on their own initiative without having the support of a university course?
Well, one thing we bring, for example, is working in a team environment. And one thing that's quite unique about the cohort that I have, for example, and I'm in DCU now 5 years, is this idea of celebrating failure. And it's not really in our DNA I've been educated in Ireland right through since 1980. It's not something in Ireland that failure is part of the experience of, you know, you try, you fail, you learn, you move on. But now you see in the generation, you know, Y and into the, for example, the noughties that the students were producing, failure is actually something that's, yeah, it's common, it's celebrated, and it's kind of, if anything, it's in vogue to have tried an idea to run with it. So one thing I would say to it, for example, what the university brings, it brings a collective of people, very vast different experiences. It gives them the experience, the exposure, and then it gives them also an international connection to it. So we, for example, in DCU, many of the other universities obviously around the country will have networks and connections outside the remit of Ireland.
And do the students who work on developing these projects, are they mainly objects or could some of them work on developing a service that is unique or that is new?
So it's a product, a service, and it can be for profit or not for profit. So it's absolutely, it varies across. It can be any industry they want. So for example, we have some people who have, with the Rio Olympics, one group of students have created an app which links into WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Organization. So it's, for example, if an athlete goes to a supermarket, they can scan a product which would link back to WADA to see if there's any infringement upon, you know, WADA's ruling. And for example, in a particular sport, whether it's boxing or rowing or swimming or whatever it might be. It can be very much pan-industry.
And how has entrepreneurship changed over the last two decades in line with changes we've seen in how we live, consume and interact with the world in that time?
My area of research interest is in family business. So if you think about, you know, the village or the town or the city you come from in Ireland, the pace of change, they're predominantly family businesses. So greater than 75% of firms in Ireland are family firms. But I want to give you an example of a family business in Northern Ireland, which is kind of entrepreneurship and how the traditional model of entrepreneurship has changed. So the reason I'm a very passionate triathlete and I do a lot of cycling. So if anyone's interested in cycling, the biggest bike shop in the world is a company called Chain Reaction Cycles. Now, when I say world, I mean a global business. It's just outside of Belfast, an incredible facility. But they've changed the way or the method by which we know business. If I asked you, where would you expect a bike shop to be? You think, you know, the street corner, you know, my local town, my local village. But nah, this family business have challenged the norm, and they said they've largely employed this, what we term as a kind of blue ocean strategy. They say that people are no longer really going to their bricks and mortar or their local, you know, bike store. So what they've done is kind of like a very similar to, it's an online bike store. So they've looked at the actual bricks and mortar presence is very small, it's a small little store. But they've got like a store about the size of IKEA, and it's just a huge warehouse. So it's a warehouse of, you know, everything you can think of, from a bike bell right through to a tire on a bicycle, and they ship and sell right across the world. So for me, it's about challenging the norm. It's looking at about trends in how consumers buy products. You know, for example, the Airbnb of this world. Who would ever have thought 5 years ago that Airbnb or Halo or Uber, any of these modern technologies. So, and one of the things I personally like to teach is the idea of value innovation. And I challenge you to think, what is the least profitable industry to be in the United States? The least profitable industry has been airlines, year on year, every year. So for example, the return on equity, normally about a minus 12.5%. It's not a very, if you want to say, sexy industry to enter into. But then you question, well, how have, like, you know, the first budget airline of the world via Southwest Airlines, how have Ryanair, how have AirAsia, how have they challenged the norm? And it's largely through this value innovation premise. And you're targeting a mass market. In the 1980s, we think one of the most, the busiest routes in the world was, say, Dublin-London or London-Paris. Who was flying Dublin, London, London, Paris? It was the, you know, upper class or the wealthy in Irish society and British society. So if you look at what a Ryanair did, they said, well, or a Southwest Airlines, the first one, they said, well, how do we apply value innovation? So they didn't target the upper class. So they were largely in the red ocean. So they were going to fly and going to pay for their seat 2A and their glass of wine and their, you know, extra luggage, all of the stuff that comes with what we know as airline travel in the 1980s. What did the budget airlines do? We said, well, let's go after the mass market. The people who have maybe never flown before, the people who have maybe fly once a year. Why don't we get them and say, right, they're the big cohort. They're more than, say, 60% of the market. And so how do we do that? And that's why they fly into their Paris Beauvais and they're deliberately trying to keep it cheap. But let's go after the mass market. It's a really exceptional read, is Blue Ocean Strategy. One of the most really, really great book to read.
Who's the author of that?
Kim and Mowburn. It's the most widely sold book of the Harvard Business Press.
If you were to break down what somebody needs to learn to be an entrepreneur, how would you break it down?
There are three things, and this is not my, I definitely won't claim to have coined this, but there's a very interesting Harvard-based academic by the name of Timmons, now since passed. And the Timmons model of entrepreneurship would say there's three things you need to start any successful, sustainable business: opportunity, resources, and team. If you look at how Google started, so Google started out with this opportunity, which was to, you know, within a nanosecond, I can tell you an output of hotels here in Dublin City. Great, okay, superb idea. So they had an opportunity. Was there a demand in the industry? Without a doubt. You know, so then they said, right, well, the next thing we need is resources. So they went to, at the early stage, seed investors, angel investors into their business. So then they had that. But then what they needed to scale the business was people. So they need skilled software. They need skilled engineers. So they had to scale. Now, the three of them need to grow in tandem. The opportunity, the resource, and the team need to be of equal size. You could have a lot of money, so a big or. You could have a great team, you know, big T, but if you have a terrible idea, it's going nowhere. So when you're thinking about your business idea, do you have something which is an opportunity? Do you have sufficient resources? And then do you have the knowledge or the human capital to be able to sustain it?
How do you plant seeds in somebody that will grow into entrepreneurship? Or how early can you start doing that in a student's life? Say if a teacher at primary school, is that too early to start thinking about entrepreneurship? Or, you know, when can you start developing those kinds of skills?
No, absolutely not. I teach normally from a little 19 to kind of 23 year olds. I was put in front of a class of 11 year olds trying to teach entrepreneurship, and this is a huge challenge. But it was the same dynamic. It's the same questions with regard to business models. So the students were looking at, you know, old materials they had in their house and how could they upcycle them and, you know, make a new idea, a new product. But the same logics, the same five questions to what constitutes a business plan evolves. I think it's a different way of thinking. It's kind of challenging the norm. Do I encourage it? Yeah, it's absolutely. It's working in a team. It's the whole, like, for example, great fun at the start is the brainstorming session. You put four or five kids together and you get them, say, right, here's a problem, you know, tell me about how do we resolve a problem. And they'll throw so many different ideas at you, and it's encouraging creativity from a very, very early stage. So yeah, from my take on it, yeah, I think this creativity, innovation, entrepreneurship thinking should be in front and center in a syllabus.
You were awarded the President's Award for Teaching Excellence in Dublin City University in 2015. How did that come about?
I was incredibly fortunate, and thankfully I was actually nominated by the students, which was a nice thing. So one thing I tried to do in the year is to make the module as engaging as possible. Challenging, yes, but as engaging as possible. So it's an alignment between theory and practice. The module is split across four assessment points. And the first one is what we term as idea recognition. Tell me about a new product or service which is innovative, which can be started for a fictitious seed of about €150,000. So it's about why there's a demand, why there's an opportunity, why is the customer going to pay for the product? You know, it's understanding the business model. So, you know, how do you deliver the product? How do you put a barrier in place? So that's the first stage. Now, what we do with that, and we work with Ernst & Young with the Entrepreneur of the Year competition. And the finalists and the Entrepreneur of the Year come in to the university in DCU, and they sit and listen to the students' early stage ideas. So the students get this superb opportunity in September of the academic year to pitch two ideas to these, you know, leading Irish and international entrepreneurs. And it's a really enlightening experience to get, obviously from myself, from an academic feedback, but also from, you know, from practitioners in the field. The second stage to do is feasibility study. So they're out, I suppose, in many respects, getting their hands dirty. They go out and they work with 3D printers, they're out in laboratories, they're interviewing people, they're doing focus groups, and, you know, they're making prototypes. At that stage, you'll see, let's make it. What color we make it in? What, you know, what design? So they're asking all of the difficult questions. They're trying to see how do they grow the opportunity as much as possible. The third stage you do is the one the students, I think, like the most. So it's about digital marketing and use of social media to grow and develop a product. So it's about undertaking a marketing plan with either very limited or no budget. So what we challenge them to do is to create a 1 minute marketing video or viral, which can go, for example, onto their social media, can go onto their Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever it might be. And then it's how to integrate that. You know, are there milestones in your marketing campaign? So, you know, milestone one is my Facebook campaign. How does that link in with my Twitter account? And, you know, how is it cyclical within it? Then the final stage we do is a Dragon's Den. So you see it on RTE, we see it on BBC. What we do, we work with the MBA alumni. So every year we have 25 MBA from, you know, right back from DCU was founded in the 1980s. So people of all different experiences from all different industries come in and sit in a Dragon's Den. So the students pitch for a seed investment of €50,000. And for that, they get 7 minutes to pitch their idea, and then 5 minutes for questionings thereafter. And then in return, they give a percentage equity they're going to give in return for the business. And throughout that, I should have said, we have leading Irish and international entrepreneurs who come in and tell their story. So for me, it's not just about the academic, you know, the theoretical perspective. It's very much about combining theory and practice.
That sounds very well developed and very mature module, as you describe it. But can you take us back to when you sat down to draw up this module in the first place? What kind of things were you thinking about? What did you want to put into the module, or what were you trying to achieve in designing it before you had firmed up all these different elements that you just talked about?
I'm kind of a little bit like the prodigal son in DCU, because I did my undergraduate degree actually in the module I teach now. And then I went to another university in the city to do a master's and PhD, and I'm back in DCU. So I suppose been there, done that, been through the module. And for my dealing with and engaging in entrepreneurship, I think it has to be like a theory and practice, or action by doing. And from my take, I tried to make it as practical an experience as possible.
How did you, say, for example, make sure that you were going to engage the students? And the reason I'm asking you, I'm trying to think of somebody who is listening to this, who maybe teaches another subject, not entrepreneurship, but they're teaching another subject, and they're trying to think, how could I design a module that could be that engaging for my students? So I suppose I'm asking you to step back a little bit from this particular module, and kind of why do they feel so highly and speak so highly of it after they've gone through it?
I think what I did at the outset actually was I looked at best practice, And I know a lot of people say this, but I physically went on, and it was largely North American universities, and I tried to see what they're doing, and what they're doing incredibly well. And you see, you know, the awards that have come from it, and the students have gone on to, you know, for example, great things in Silicon Valley. So that was probably my first thing I did, to look at what, you know, what is the competitor doing, if you want to say.
And how did you even find that out? I mean, were you looking at, say, syllabuses from other courses, or...
Yeah, syllabus, absolutely, yeah. Even just, you know, the simplest thing is obviously, like, a lot is a Google search to see, you know, what syllabus they have, what sort of engagement they have, what do the students go on to do thereafter? Are they entrepreneurs? Do they work in a, you know, software space thereafter? What's the profile of the students? What are they doing? So that was probably the first thing I would have done, is kind of do my homework, if you want to say, on to see what is best practice. Then I thought about how do I make it as practical as I can. So I went and met with a lot of, say, students who have been through the module, and asked for their insights on what they would have thought could be improved on it. I then also went to prospective employers and said, well, what are the gaps in regard to you see with students coming out from a university capacity, and how could that be improved? So I tried to see, well, okay, so what's the skills the employer want? What have the previous students said? We learned this, but we didn't learn that, and see how do we match them together.
And because it's an entrepreneurship module, do you expect the students to go into companies that already exist, or would you actually prefer to see them starting off their own businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. So we see both. Of course, you know, as a lecturer in entrepreneurship, I'd love to see everybody start their own business. But no, you work on the assumption that just some people, that's not, you know, their skill set or skill profile, or their risk profile, I should say, is not for starting their own business. So some people know, but some people will. And from my side, I talked about this idea of corporate entrepreneurship. So I don't mind if somebody walks to work in an accounting firm or a software company or a pharmaceutical company. They will engage in entrepreneurship in some capacity. So it's about understanding, what does the customer want? How do we improve the product offering? What is the current offering? What's the price point? How do we maybe do a pilot test of it? So these are the basic premises of entrepreneurship, whether you're starting your own business or starting to improve an existing product or service in the market. So yeah, I work on the assumption that the majority of people who go into an existing company, whether it's a FDI here in the city, or, you know, an Indigenous Irish business. But more, what's very interesting, a lot more people now are starting engaging with this kind of social entrepreneurship. And there's a very much a movement of you know, people in their early 20s, mid-20s, of engaging and wanting to grow social endeavours, not just in Ireland, but very much internationally.
Eric, you have a black belt in Taekwondo. What is Taekwondo?
Taekwondo is a Korean martial art. There's two forms of Taekwondo, which is, the first one is WTF, which is the World Taekwondo Federation, which is the one you saw in the Olympics. That's a sport. The second one is the one I do, which is ITF, which is International Taekwondo Federation, which is a martial art. It's very similar, or quite similar, to karate. So it's a, you know, foot and hand martial art.
And how do you become good at Taekwondo?
How do you become good at anything in life? I think it was just persistence, dedication. So I started martial arts from a very, very young age. I was 11 when I started. And at that stage, I didn't kind of foresee myself. Of course, you look at black belts in your class and say that's your aspiration or your role model. But I think for the one thing I personally took from martial arts was commitment, dedication, and if nothing else, it gave you structure, rigor, and routine. So as in, for example, the grading or the belt structure, dedication was probably a big thing. And I think I've personally taken a lot from the process of starting out as a white belt, which is the lowest level in martial art, going through to a black belt. And for me, it's been very similar in my education. Say, for example, maybe starting out with junior cert, leaving cert, and then just progressing through one's, say, schooling or academic. It's another hurdle, and it's discipline and dedication and focus to get through it. And I think martial arts for me was about respect as well. So there was an authority there. They corrected you, you practiced, you had an exam, for example, you learned from, and then you repeat the process. So, and then equally, it was a respect of a discipline. So you were trained in an armed combat, which is obviously a very dangerous thing, if you want to say. But I would probably be quite reserved in regard to use or of the martial art. Now, from my experience, that's what I find about most martial art practitioners, that they will have a very potentially dangerous skill set, but often very, very unless it's required, desire to use it. So for me, it gave that respect of the gave the focus and dedication of the martial art.
And you also got involved in coaching young people in Taekwondo. So what did you learn about education from that experience?
I'm from Drogheda, and I was involved in a Taekwondo school in Drogheda for many years. I think I tried to make it as fun, the learning, as I could as possible. Thankfully, at the time, I was on an Irish Taekwondo team, so I took some of the learnings, which would have been, say, best practice from an international perspective, and say, well, how do I bring that back to a student who's, you know, 15-year-old, white belt or yellow belt, as it is in the classroom environment? So, yeah, I would have thought it's about, you know, seeing what is best practice, then trying to make it fun, engaging. Like, simple things we did, we actually used to have in a lot of martial arts studios, you'll have mirrors. Sometimes someone says, you're doing this wrong. But it's like if you ever swim, someone says your technique is bad, but it's only if you actually see it and you go, oh yeah, it is bad. So for example, like little things like that, out of some challenge to see, well, for example, I was in school and someone would say to you, you're doing this wrong, but you never understood what actually you were doing wrong. So it's like in rugby, like the analysis or what we did in the mid-90s, for example, in Taekwondo, which was novel, was actually to record yourself doing a pattern or a tull or movements in a hall to see, ah, okay, there's my problem. And it's understanding where you're making the issue, whether it's looking yourself in the mirror or to see the block or the kick that's going wrong. So yeah, I think that was a big learning for me.
You have written that you have been privileged in education. What do you mean by that in your own primary and post-primary education and probably third level as well?
Yeah, I think probably my parents were the two of the most important things they've instilled in me is one is the importance of education, and then the love of sport is probably very closely followed. I think this is kind of cliche, but for me, I think education has truly been so superb. It breaks down barriers, socioeconomic groupings, ability to travel, just so much opportunity that even in the university, we have so much diversity in DCU. Located there in Dublin City. So I would have seen that, yeah, education, it has been a big part of my life. And then the challenge and the structure and the routine, and you know, you're always learning. And I work with entrepreneurs, so they're always challenging the norm, which is every day is totally different. So I work in a lot of these, that kind of defies everything your mother told you to do, so you don't write on the walls. So in my kind of office space, you write on the walls, which is bizarre thing when you walk into the office. So a student comes in and says, right, you got an idea, throw it up on the wall there, and we kind of tease it out or talk about it. So that was that's the kind of environment that to work in. So the education for me has been, but my take on education is I would see it as a ladder, and I you know, if you don't get into the DCUs or the UCDs or the Trinity of this world, I think you need to get on the ladder somewhere. I get all these, you know, people going, oh, I didn't make the points requirement this year. My encouragement or advice to you is just get on and do something, because years will roll by and months or weeks or, you know, years obviously in that context will roll by, and it's much more difficult to start it. So if you have a passion for it, yeah, start as soon as you can. But equally then, I see a lot of people who maybe do a course which they feel they've got the points for, but they don't have the passion for it. So passion and education have to go hand in hand.
Who or what inspires you?
I read a lot, but actually the person who inspires me most is my parents, actually. Yeah, I think the belief they've shown in me and just the structure. So I was the first person in my family to go to college. And I think my parents had great foresight to see the value of education. And they, you know, always encouraged it, whether it was, you know, to pick you up from an evening study or to, you know, if you needed an extra tuition or whatever it might be. I think they're my more, just for the belief they've had in me. So yeah, I think my parents would, yeah, be my role models.
Have you a favorite book or blog or writer about education?
My favorite book is probably not one about education, but it's one I use a lot in an education environment. It's the one I mentioned actually earlier on, is this Blue Ocean Thinking. And the reason it's kind of front and center to me is obviously I teach entrepreneurship, and I like to use it because if I'm teaching or educating, if you want to say, there's different levels. So it could be an undergraduate class, it could be a postgraduate, for example, in a master's or PhD, or it could be an executive education within big corporates around the city here. So for me, the Blue Ocean Strategy is something I've read many, many, many times, but something I think is so relevant and so much of value.
If you could make one change, Eric, to your current school or, you know, teaching environment and resources or capacity were not an issue, what change would you make?
One of the things I would say, and again, this is my experience of universities or institutes of technology, is that some schools are kind of pillarized. And what I mean by that is that's a business school, that's an engineering school, that's a computer application school. So from my reading of it and in entrepreneurship, I think schools and universities need to integrate better. So for example, we need to have students coming from business with a finance or a marketing skill set, working with an engineer who's maybe an electronic, you know, civil, whatever it might be, with also a computer applications developer. So it's the very much cross-functional skill set that I think is where the value at is. And I think in changes in future Irish education, that's where we need to move toward. And that's where the efforts are, for example, if you look at many of the Ivy League schools right across the US, they're trying to do that. They're going to have, rather than this pillarized or polarized business school, engineering school, they'll have cross-functional skill sets within universities.
And finally, Eric, what from your own primary or post-primary education informs your practice in education today?
One thing, probably from a primary perspective, I found it very difficult to learn something if I couldn't make it practical, I couldn't visualize it, if I couldn't make it real in my head, whether it was everything from an Irish essay to a, you know, mathematical equation. And I know, for example, this is the way mathematical schooling is going towards, making it more practical driven. But from my perspective, and even from an teaching entrepreneurship, I need to, theory and practice need to work in my head. I find it very difficult to say, right, that's theory and that sits in isolation, that's practice, that sits in isolation. So probably from a very young age, I realized that to be able to learn something, I could relate it back to a practical example. And once you give me a practical example, I'll talk about it all day, every day. You know? So yeah, for me, theory and practice is key.
And that was Eric Clinton explaining how his learning in primary school influences his teaching today in Dublin City University. I want to thank Eric for his time in recording the interview. Remember, you can listen to or download podcasts of this and all previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com. You can get in touch with me by emailing feedback or suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.